Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to The Backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and I want to welcome all the callers on the board and those listening online to the segment this evening, as we have an exciting guest for us who's going to really put KPH on the map. Because, as you know, the objective of Backyard Labrish is to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And we are here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock, where we do just that. And I want to start off by apologizing for not being able to broadcast last week, but we had a little technical difficulty as I was out of town, and that segment, you know, could not be done. So I hope you'll accept my apology. Remember now, you have to be sort of light on me, because as you know, I'm a senior's senior, and I am trying to be as techie smart as I possibly can, but sometimes, you know, it gets out of hand. So I was in an area where I was not at home, so I wasn't able to broadcast. But our guest is here this evening, and I'm very excited, because one of the things that drove me to this is the fact that I went online and noticed that there was a lot of gaps in the history of Jamaica as I knew it, or for the period that I was there when I grew up in the 30s and 40s. So we're going to fill some of that in that is not online tonight by having this special guest. But first, I want to get you in the mood, as I usually do, because remember, we're here in the backyard to relax, have fun, and go back in our memory bag, whether you were a visitor, you were born there, you just love the place, or whatever. You know how those balmy breezes come in the evenings as the sun go down over across the sea, whether you're on your veranda, on the beach, on top of the roof, as we used to be in the old days. I don't know if that still happens. But I ask you to get back to that special place and just relax and just be chilling, as we say, no problem, man. So I hope Mr. Kevin MacLeod, who provides the little classic reggae as to introduce our program, have put you in that mood. You've got your favorite drink in your hand, whether it's a rum and coke or rum and coconut water, or just a fruit cocktail, non-alcoholic. As we get ready for the holidays, I want you to just get back there in that chilling mood. So without any further ado, I see that my guest is here with us, and let me just give you a little tidbit about what we're discussing tonight, if you're not on my list and perhaps don't know. But as you know, I've been doing back in the old days of people who graduated from many different fine institutions in Jamaica, and they've been very, very popular. And our seniors have been going back in their memory bank and coming up with such wonderful memories that they've shared with the fans and the rest of the world. But we haven't touched anything yet on Kingston Public Hospital, the nursing school that most Kingstonians know about. Because I remember my dear girlfriend's mother was trained at KPH. And I want to tell you a quick story before I introduce you to my guests. I was just as crazy as I am now when I was growing up. So I remember there was a costume party someplace in Kingston at some big park. My mother had a friend who was studying nursing at KPH at the time, and I just loved her uniform. I don't remember how old I was, but I think I was perhaps in my early teens. And they used to wear a special hat, and she had a special pin, and I don't remember whether she wore it on the hat or on her uniform. So I was about her size. She was petite, and I was going to be borrowing her nursing uniform to appear in this costume show where you were going to get a prize. They were judging everybody. My mother warned me that I could have the clothing but not take the hat and the pin. But, of course, I begged the person for it and sneaked it in and actually got a prize in the, you know, the costume thingy. However, I did lose the pin. And, you know, the rest is history, because I remember that, I want to say spanking, but it was worse than that, that I got, because the pin was irreplaceable, whatever she, however way she got it. So that's my little KPH story. So I have some very fond memories because I loved the nursing uniforms. And I'll tell you later about my little nursing career in the Army. But without any further ado, I want to introduce our very charming guest this evening, who happens to be a relative. I conned her into this. And she is Miss Jeannie Kneebone, for those from Westmoreland that might have gone to Manning's. You might remember her and some of her family. But she is now Mrs. Atwood, and I am going to open up the mic and let her tell us a little about herself and her days at KPH. So let me open up the mic here. Hold on. Good evening, Miss Jeannie. Welcome to the backyard. Are you there?
Good evening, Margaret. Yes, good evening. I'm right here listening.
Oh, great. Well, we have quite a few callers on the board, and I know that you are anxious to tell your story because you had fond memories of being trained at that marvelous institution. So I want to welcome you to the backyard, and for those of you listening online, And let me just say to the callers, I hope that there are some people who might have, are Kingstonians, number one, or might have remembered something about training at KPH or knew someone who was trained there or was trained there themselves, that would help to join the Labrish. If and when you're ready to do so, just hit 1 on your telephone. That will indicate to me on my little computer that you want to talk to us. So, you know, this is a Labrish. It's very casual and relaxed while we get enlightened and preserve this rich history of us. So, Miss Jeannie, the floor is yours. First, tell us a little bit about your early years in Sablemar, where you came from.
Good evening. Thank you for listening. I hope I'll be able to contribute and make this program interesting.
I'm sure you will.
I was born in Savannah, Lamar. My name is Janet Vaughn Astwood. I grew up in the 40s. I did all my schooling there, including my high school at Manning. After which, I started my nursing training, my nurse's training at Key Peach in 1960 until 1963.
Wow, okay.
It's a 3-year program, and the first 3 months is called PTS, which means Preliminary Training School. We all went to classes, and we had to pass this three-month period in order to continue as a nurse in Jamaica.
Wow.
At the time I started, we were affiliated with the university, University Hospital, PTS. PTS was with the KPH nurses and the university nurses.
Well, so at that time, both institutions were training nurses.
Yes, this was going on before, you know.
Right.
I don't know when it started, but when I got there, the preliminary training school.
Uh huh.
We would go up to the university school every morning, Mondays to Fridays, on the nurse's bus. We had a special bus that took us up, and we joined all roommates.
At the hospital, did they have housing there?
Oh, we lived at KPH.
Ah.
We were the junior nurses, so we stayed at the nurse's residence across from the hospital.
Okay.
That's where we started. We'd go in on a Sunday afternoon, and we were checked in and briefed, and later on in the evening, we would go up to the common room, and we were taught how to make our caps, the flute the caps, because the uniforms, before we got in, we got the material sent to our home, and with a pattern, and our dressmakers would make the uniforms.
No, that's interesting. I never knew how the uniform came about. Ah.
Oh, yes. The material, I know for the KPH nurses. I'm not sure if the UC nurses were made, ready-made, or they had it done too. But it had to be made in a certain way, so many inches from the calves and, you know, the length and whatnot. So it was a blue uniform with a white apron, and the apron was a part of the uniform. We had to have our aprons on whenever we had that uniform on.
Okay, so it's a blue dress, and the apron is
with
a
white
separate
apron.
Piece.
Okay. Yes. So we had our uniforms, white, royal blue uniforms, white aprons, white caps that were fluted. These uniforms were washed for us if we wanted by the hospital. We would send it to the laundry room, and they would come back all starched and and ironed, and we wore white shoes, and we had to wear stockings. You had to wear stockings.
Were there white stockings or just regular stockings?
No, those regular skin tone stockings.
All right. Okay.
And we could wear black or white shoes. So most people wore white shoes. This is sort of after the English fashion of training.
I got
you. So I'll go tell you about KPH. We lived across the hospital. In the hostel, we all had our separate rooms. And, you know, we're the grubs now because we came in, and they would bang on the doors in the mornings to wake us up So everybody would rush to the bathroom, get ready, get dressed, and you had to be in the dining room by a certain time. You had to have a meal there. And then
People were in a batch, the new batch?
Okay, let me see. Maybe about 15.
Oh, gotcha.
I'd say
right.
About 15. You had batches, and then we became groups in that. Maybe 50 nurses would come in,
mm-hmm.
and they would have a PTS training, and then another batch would come in 3 months after. And when they complete their PTS training, they would join us, and we would become like a group of 30.
I got you. All right.
Okay.
So
when
we
would start
banging on the doors to wake you up, the older nurses?
I'm not sure. Yeah, you had home sisters. You had, there were nurses, you know, more mature nurses who were home sisters. So they saw to us that we're, because we're all coming from home. We are young ladies leaving home, most of us, for the first time.
Right,
you know,
right.
And you would hear that bang on that door, and it's time for you to get up and get ready and be in the dining room at a certain time. And, you know, and then we'd all go out to the nurse's bus, which was a white bus with Kingston School of Nursing written on it. And I remember Mr. Mays, the driver, and we would sit in the bus, and he would drive us up to the university. Can imagine the excitement and heart thumping and things at that time. And we went up and we joined the other 15 from UC. I think it was 30 or 30 something to the batch. And
gotcha.
So we went to classes together. We went to lectures, and then we had to go to the classroom to learn to make beds. That's one of the first things in nursing, how to make beds, because there were different styles of beds.
Uh-huh.
Beds for certain procedures, like if the patient was going to the OR, they had to, you know, the patient is going to be going for surgery, and the bed would have to be prepared to receive the patient, because you didn't have anything like recovery rooms then. The patient left the OR back to the ward, and we had to do everything for that patient.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were taught to make beds. Surgical beds, whatever was the patient with an amputation, and you had to put certain cups and bowls and things around, you know. Just so you have to have everything ready so that when that, what you think the patient will need, you know, so you don't have to be running around, chasing around looking for things, a draw sheet, depending on the type of surgery, you would have a draw sheet covered with with a sheet and so on, and pillows and bed cradles. For instance, if you're having an amputation of a leg or anything like that, you couldn't have the bed clothes resting on the part. So they had these special cradles that was put over the limb, and the sheets and blankets would be on top. Does it? We had such funny jokes, because sometimes, you know, you're so anxious and nervous and you're making the bed, and some people forget to put the draw sheets on and things like that. But I'll continue.
So you had inspection. You had someone who inspected it after you made it.
We hadn't. Okay. Oh, yes. You had the nursing sisters. You had the tutors. You had the tutors. Some we were taught anatomy and physiology. Nursing. I can't remember all the subjects. You know, medicine, pediatrics. You had different lecturers coming in, you know, coming sometimes doctors. And so we went through all that. We would have lunch at the university. We'd go back to classes for another subject. And then in the evenings, we'd board our nurses' special bus that would take us back to KPH. You know, that was fun because, you know, you're driving through crossroads, going down to North Street, and some of the girls who were from Kingston, they would see, I remember, some of their friends maybe walking or driving in a car and waving and, you know. So so we had quite a bit of fun. It was a lot of work. We had to study hard, and in our batch, I think only one person feels from KP, which was bad. But she went on to England anyhow, and she became a nurse. And did very well.
So if you fail that PTSD,
if you fail the PTSD, you could not continue nursing in Jamaica at that time. There was no other nursing school, just because the same group of people who interviewed you in order that you be qualified to start the program, are the same. It was the same group that interviewed the university students.
Right. So let me ask you this. Now, after that PTS class, do you still go to UC every day for training?
No. When you finish the preliminary training school and you pass your exam, we all get our results. You know, you have the exams there, the doctors coming in, and you had to answer questions, you had to know everything. And no, when the PTS is over, we go back to our hospitals, and we do all the rest of our training at KPH and the university nurses at UC.
Oh, got you. Now, besides KPH, was there any other nursing school around the island that were sending people to UC at the same time for that particular course?
No.
Just KPH.
Not as far as I know. It, at that point in 1960 to 63, I don't think there were any other nursing programs. I might be wrong. I know afterwards they had other training schools, but I think at the time it was KPH. KPH was first because, remember, KPH was there before the university, which was founded in the 50s. And KPH has been there since in the 1800s, but I don't know when the School of Nursing started at KPH.
Right.
I really don't know. But we were about
I know
40.
It was long before our time.
Right.
Because I remember some of my friends' parents, you know, that was nurses and from there, that were trained there.
Because some of the sisters, the senior nurses, sisters, matron, all these people were older than us, and they were trained years, you know, before I was born.
Right. Now, what was the difference in the uniform between the new people, the first, your PTS people, and the other people? Did they wear a different kind of uniform?
No. Unlike the British system, we all wore that royal
blue
uniform and white. The only difference is after your first year, you got a white stripe on your sleeve.
Ah, I see.
When you're in PTS and your first year, we did not get a stripe. But the university nurses got a stripe.
Okay.
So we were first year if we did not have a stripe. And when we got our first stripe, we were second year. And by the time we got to our third year, we had two stripes. But UC got their first stripe, so they ended up with three at the end of the program.
I see.
And they wore a red and white, very fine stripe uniform. But they did not have to have their uniform. They did not have to have their aprons on unless they are on the ward. But the KPH nurses had to wear officially the uniform with the apron. But when we went on the wards, we had two aprons, one that we wear out of the ward. If we're leaving the ward, we had to change into the clean one, for, you know. And when we go back on the ward, we switch and put the one that you're working on in the ward.
And you
change
but
them every day.
But it was the same kind of apron?
Oh, yes.
Or was it
apron.
Different altogether?
No. It's the same apron, but you have a clean... Yeah, you start out with two clean aprons when you start the shift. You know, and when you're finished, at the end of the shift, you take that dirty apron off and take it over, but you put the clean one on because you had to go to the dining room for meals, and if you had to go anywhere, you had to. That was a part of the uniform, unlike UC, which they just wore their dresses without the apron until they got on the ward. And we had to have our caps on. And those days, it was stockings with the seam at the back, and those seams had to be straight.
Uh-huh.
Shoes had to be clean.
Uh-huh.
And we were not allowed to wear
jewelry.
Uh-huh. By the time they got to us, we were able to wear a little knob, but nothing
uh-huh.
else.
What
nothing
about
outrageous.
Makeup? Could you wear makeup?
No. You know, as a schoolgirl, we used to wash our faces and put on a little pond's cream and a little powder. But
right,
no.
Right.
No.
Okay.
But by the time I became a senior, I could wear a little lipstick and a little
uh-huh.
more, but nothing outrageous.
Right.
You know, I don't
right.
want to wear anything hanging so that it could be hitched anywhere, or a patient could drag something out of your ear and injure you, and that was the whole reason, and it's the whole uniformity, you know. They were very strict with things like that.
Right. So what was the food like that you guys had to eat?
Well, that was funny. My best meal was tea in the evening, because the food was different. It's the same sort of food that you eat in Jamaica, but with this bulk cooking, it's not as tasty as when you're home.
Uh-huh.
You know? So you get more or less the same sort of things for breakfast that we have in Jamaica.
Uh-huh.
You know? And breakfast, lunch, and we had tea in the evenings, which was tea with crackers or jam and cheese and toast or, you know, anything you'd have at tea time. And then you had a dinner in the evening.
Uh-huh.
And when you change your shift, like if you go to
and
work
how
on
long
at
was
night,
the shift in those days?
Oh,
training.
When we started, it was from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. But there was a
break. Wow.
We all went on at 6. This is after we
uh-huh.
finished PTS now. We're going on the wards. And you're allowed,
right.
you know, you go to, you're placed on a ward for so many weeks. And you work
uh-huh.
there. And as the junior nurse, anyhow, as I was saying, if you're on night duty, when you get up in the evening, breakfast is served. They switch
uh-huh.
it around. And at midnight, you have a heavy meal.
Uh-huh.
That was served.
Uh-huh.
And then in the morning, you get dinner to go to bed. Of course, a lot of us didn't, you know, you couldn't stomach that sometimes, you know.
Right.
Something like, and then they would put little tables, because you had a block for the night nurses, because we're sleeping in that area, you're supposed to be quiet. You're always shifting around. So they would leave sandwiches, or they had some crackers they used to give us. We used to call it Lifesaver, because mm-hmm. there was a medication that was named Lifesaver. Savior.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we used to call that Life Savior. We used to get tins of condensed milk, so many per month when you're on night duty, so many per week. I can't remember.
Ah, that is the issue with that.
That, so that when you're sleeping in the days, if you get hungry, you know, you can have your little milk, your little Milo or Ovaltine. You have your little tuck in your room.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? So you could snack
right.
on that. You know. It was very interesting, and we were pampered a lot. We were pampered
uh-huh.
a lot. When I think of what the nurses who trained abroad, you know, the
uh-huh.
people, the stories I hear that the people who went to England and so on. Most of the nurses, you know, in those days went to England.
Right.
And we were pampered a lot. We were pampered a lot because we had our bus to take us up and down, and then after we became first years, you're allowed to leave from the nursing home across from the hospital, and they had other nurses' homes along the way. There were about two more
nearby.
Further down
uh-huh.
by George's, Casey, Casey, yeah, area. We had about two nurses, and they had different names, you know. They had different, as you got more senior, you went to other homes. That's not too
uh-huh.
close to the hospital. But the nurse's bus would go and pick you up, too.
Uh-huh.
They had the option.
So that was like an upgrade, like a promotion. It was the housing
no,
away
no,
from the hospital.
No, they,
different?
They, No, not really. You're more senior. You're more mature now. When you go in as a PTS, you know, they sort of treat you, you know, the little ones, the young ones coming in, and they
treat
you, they bother you, and you're close to the hospital. If you're sick, they just take you across to the sick, to the hospital, and they had a
right.
sick day there.
Were you
there.
Allowed to have visitors?
Only female visitors at certain times. If you, we were not allowed to have male visitors in our rooms. If you have a male visitor, they had a lawn out front with benches, and you can sit out there. You sit on the benches to entertain your male visitors. But you're not supposed to go in the rooms.
No hanky-panky.
It was quite wide. Yeah, it was quite open, and, you know, and Jubilee was next door.
Uh-huh.
To the nurse's home. But as I said, they had home sisters. There was Nurse Roper when I was there, Sister Roper and Sister Gray. These are trained RNs, too, who were their
and
mother.
And those were all Jamaican nurses or
all
foreigners?
All Jamaican nurses. All Jamaicans. The only ones, those sisters were, the only ones, the matrons at that time were English nurses. The English matrons, yes, nurses.
Uh-huh.
We had Miss Julie Symes, who was a peach. She was a lovely woman, and she was our matron at that time. And I should tell you, we were batch 40. We were batch 40. Now, I don't know when the school started and how they did the numbers, but our batch was batch 40, and I understand just around 1962 when we had our independence, we broke away at that point from UC. I think we were the last batch to do PTS with the university nurses. And then after that, they started over from batch one. But how we were batch 40, I know you're finding people batch 14 or what. So I was told it was changed. We broke away because university got its university status. It was University College Hospital until they got the university, UC, University College Hospital. UC. They were a college until they got this status. So I suppose at that point, KPH kept their PTS nurses down there, and they didn't get together anymore.
Right. Now, the interesting thing is that there's documentation on the nursing history at UC. So it seems like, as you say, when after independence and they started over the numbering system, a new set of numbers, right?
Yeah, I don't know what they did at
whatever the history of what happened at KPH somehow got, I don't not necessarily think it's a race, but it's not certainly no place you can find it right now.
This is it. And it was the most prestigious hospital in the West Indies and in Central America because you had nurses who came to be trained there from other Caribbean islands and from places and Haiti and other Central American nurses, they would all come here to be trained at KPH.
And that's interesting because we had a guest on one night that went to the Adventist college, and she mentioned that there were students, you know, from all over the Caribbean, even some of the Latin American countries.
Right.
So my point is that the educational institutions in Jamaica at that during certain periods attracted people from several other, you know, colonies.
Right.
You know,
Central America, like Panama, Honduras, Belize, Haiti, the Cayman Islands, the Turks and Caicos Islands. We met nurses from all over, you know, students who came there to train and then go back home, or some would stay. And or they sent them off to England. I think the Adventist Hospital Training School was, I don't know when they started, but they weren't in existence, as far as I know, when I was in nursing at KPH. It was just the School of Nursing. They have several now. But
Yes, I understand that. But during my growing up in Kingston, and I grew up in Kingston, I at this point, just let me take a minute to tell our listeners that you're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. We're here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And this evening, we are talking to a past student of the nursing school at Kingston Public Hospital, lovingly called KPH, as most Kingstonians, and I think all Jamaicans know it as KPH. And if you say KPH to anybody else, it doesn't mean anything but Kingston Public Hospital. So Miss Jeannie is telling us about her experience in the 60s, just before independence, of being trained at KPH. So back to you, Miss Jeannie.
Yes, we're also affiliated with, not really, Victoria Jubilee. We did not do any midwifery training. That was a different course from the registered nurses course.
So your course was a three-year course.
It's a three-year course, same as the university. If you wanted to do midwifery, you could go after you finish that and you become a registered midwife, a certified.
And where would you go for that if you wanted it?
Well, the two schools were Victoria Jubilee, which is across from KPH, and at the university hospital, because I went to UC to do my midwifery. When I graduated, I went back home to Sablemont and worked in the hospital where I was born for two years. And then I went to University Hospital and did my midwifery there. And after
Jubilee part of the public hospital system?
I am not sure of the relationship. Well, I suppose so, because it's a government hospital. It's two different entities, though. It's two different...
Different buildings, and they're on two different properties?
Buildings, yes, they're on different compounds. It's still part of the government, you know, but that was not included. We didn't do any obstetrics during our general training. That's a different training, right?
Uh-huh.
I think if you were not a nurse, it was a longer course, I'm not sure, for midwifery. But if you're an RN, it's a shorter course. I think somewhere 6 months, and the university had a 10-month course that I did. Or the nurses go off to England and do midwifery, because that's a entirely different.
So let me ask you a question. So someone could just go to Jubilee and just learn to become a midwife?
Yes, because in Jamaica, midwives delivered babies. Like the British system. And so nurses could be trained as midwives without being an RN.
Right.
Yeah. But I always thought, why be an RN and you cannot deliver a baby? That sort of didn't make sense. You know, I just adore babies.
Yes.
So I love babies, and I wanted to do midwifery too. So, you know. There was also a psychiatric hospital, yes, but we didn't do a psychiatric course at that time. We had an introduction to psychology, and you visit the hospital just, you know, because you go around for clinicals and go to different parts of the training. You go to places like the Leper's Home, Hanson Home, and you go to the Chest Hospital, which was, they used to call it the TB San. And you would go to the waterworks or somewhere to see how the water and the systems work, you know, and a little touch of public health. And then we'd be able to, you know, but as a junior nurse, you know, when you go to the ward for the first time, they send you to the sluice room.
Oh, what's that?
Or you work in the pantry.
Oh.
So... you'd spend a week
in the pantry. So when you work in the pantry, what do you do in the pantry?
Okay. You have to help to take the trays or to the patients, because all the patients had different types of diet depending on the diagnosis. You have a big trolley comes from that would come from a main kitchen, you know, with different slots with different diets, like salty diet or a diabetic diet or a low-fat diet, depending, you know, a soft or liquids only. And so you learn, you know, it's a part of the learning system. You have a ward maid. You have a lady who works in the kitchen. You don't cook there.
Right,
but, you know,
right.
You can heat milk, and they send up bread and butter and things, and you fix the patient's plates and trays, and you take it into them.
To them. I see what you mean. Okay, so you are not actually in the preparation, just the presentation.
No.
Right.
But I must add that part of the training, too, when you got more senior, we spent, I can't remember how many hours, but we went to the main kitchen so we could learn to do things like gruel or, I remember, sort of a watery sort of porridge, you know.
To actually prepare it?
Yes. You learn, you know, it's something that, you know, nothing, no big cooking. But something like what you would call invalid cookery. Invalid cookery. Is that, you know, if a person needs something to be creamed or mashed potatoes or... We didn't do any peeling and things like that. But just an introduction to see how things were done. I remember going to the kitchen, the main kitchen, maybe just for a couple hours.
It was more or less very thorough and well-rounded.
Very thorough, well-rounded. We had hands-on. As I said, you started. We used to get our Winchester bottles, this big brown bottle, and we would go to the pharmacy. They called it the dispensary, and they would half fill it with J's. And we would go back
to the room. I remember the smell of that thing.
Okay. That was the
disinfectant. What did you need the J's for? Why you had to get it.
Cleaning all the dirty linen that was used the night before with all the excreta, any human excreta you can think of, were in those sheets.
And you had to clean it?
We put gloves on and we had to sluice the blood and everything out of those sheets before they went to the laundry.
My
house had a laundry room where they were in big bins and they had a huge cistern in there, and you had bedpans.
Was a mask part of how you geared up to do?
No mask. Ooh. You have on your gloves, and you have the different brushes and things to use, and you had to sluice those dirty clothes out. That is initiation. But you know, I just, you know, and when you finish, you know, you sweat because there's no air condition and the hairdo is sweat out.
Yes, and then it's out of that.
And I remember one morning I was in the sluice room and you had the, what they call the ward maids then. And I heard this ward maid man, she came and she said, when this little nurse working at the sluice room, when she finish, you can eat off the floor.
Wow. That is you.
But I didn't say a word. You know what I mean? Because you're junior and you're trembling.
What was the relationship between the seniors and the juniors? I know that in the male things, a lot of times they talked about some of the students that might go in different places talk about what is being called hazing now, you know, sort of thing.
That was not allowed. We had no hazing in nursing because it was such a serious and important job. Remember being told that. No hazing in nursing.
So it was actually
one group of students who had no hazing, but you had to respect your seniors. Like if you see a senior coming along and is going, wants to go through that door, you step back and you open the door and hold the door until the senior goes through. That is common courtesy. But, you know, things like that. And if you see the matron or somebody passing, you don't speak unless you're spoken to. Things like that.
Ooh.
But when we got in, for some reason, a lot of the senior nurses loved us, fell in love with us, and we didn't have, you know, you always have the odd person, he's rude or, you know what I mean?
Right.
But our senior nurses were very nice to us. We were, you know, no hazing, you know, but discipline. And you had to sit in a certain area of the dining room, depending on your seniority. Yes.
Oh.
You know, things like that. You know, the juniors are sitting there and the senior nurses.
Now, did you all eat the same food, though? Was there
a
different
food? Oh, yes.
Oh.
It's the same
all
food.
Right.
And if something was prepared and you didn't like it, you could always get a bowl of soup with some bread and butter. There was always something there. You know,
right.
I mean, they're serving so many hundred people food, and I mean, the eggs were blue by the time the boiled eggs, the eggs in the morning were blue because they're in this huge pot boiling, you know. But it was wholesome food. It's not as tasty as home, you know.
Right, and was the place fairly clean and attractive in those days? Oh,
clean. It's an institution, so there wasn't much attractiveness. If I think at Christmas time, you know, special things, they would put up little decorations, I think. Sort of can't remember. But it's nothing dirty. Oh, no. You had these people round the clock, different shifts, working day and night in the kitchen.
Right.
You had a huge kitchen across from the hospital, which was different from the hospital kitchen. You had the nurses' home kitchen, and the staff nurses were able, I remember at night, could go over to the dining room and you're fed. The government actually pay you to do nursing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we didn't pay to go to KPH.
Oh.
Or UC, I don't think. No.
That's interesting because in research, I found that it's quite expensive in Jamaican dollars now. I mean, it's thousands of dollars to
be trained. Yes, you have to pay now. This is why, they started bonding the nurses or something. They had to work for so many years before they could leave or whatever. But, you know, most of the nurses stayed in those days. Everybody wasn't going off anywhere to America. But the government trained us. We didn't have to be in. We got the materials for uniforms. We had our clothes washed. You had your laundry bags, and you put them out, and they come back clean and ironed and whatever. And you had your meals, and you had maids who cleaned your rooms and the bathrooms.
Uh-huh.
You know, everything.
So did you have a curfew where you allowed, let's say you're off from your ward duty, were you allowed to go where you want to go and come back at a certain time?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Oh.
But at night, the gate is locked. You're not supposed to be out after a certain time. I can't remember.
You did
exactly
have a curfew.
You had a curfew, and each of the nurses' residents had a home sister, someone in charge, a senior, mature person who we report to because you get sick. And they see to it that you're seen, because sometimes you get sick. And even if you're seen at the hospital, you go back. If you're not that ill to be in the sick bay, you can go back to the residence. But there's a senior, there's a mother, house mother, you call them.
I got you.
Who's, you know, who would see to us. And if there was no cooking facility as such, I mean, you didn't have any kitchens at the other homes, because you eat when you get off duty and get on the bus or take the general, you know, or walk or whatever if you wish. So sometimes they request food for you and it would be delivered to the home where you were.
I got you.
Of course, by the time you became a senior, you had a little hot plates or whatever and a little kitchenette that you could. But we didn't do too much cooking as such, and you got a stipend. You got, I don't remember, but we used to get every fortnight, I think we used to. I don't remember how often.
Oh, I haven't
but
heard
get
that word in a long
money.
That term in a long time. Fortnight. That
I
was
don't
so
remember,
commonly
you
used
get
in
food,
those days.
You get everything
which
you
the,
need.
But
you
for
got
the people who
need.
Might be the foreigners who might come by, because they do come by and listen to the shows, that means every 2 weeks, right?
I can't remember. I'm a little confused because back in
Jamaica,
I remember people got monthly.
If anybody
monthly,
on the board can help us out here, let us know.
Monthly.
But I think that means 2 weeks.
No, I think
but
it
I haven't heard
monthly.
That term in donkey's years. That's interesting.
I think it might have been monthly. I don't remember. I honestly don't remember. But you got pocket money. You got
right.
any pocket money.
Good.
But the government uh-huh. is looking after you. So your parents and whoever, family members, you know, would send, you know, you'd get your little. But we had everything. And you'd go home on holidays and stock up on things. We had enough money to buy, you know, your hygiene products.
Personal
things.
Things
like
yes.
a personal thing.
So
yeah,
it was
money.
A great program. Now,
it was a great program.
So.
Yeah. We were well looked after. We were well looked after. I tell you that. Well looked after. We were able to go out. Oh, yes, we can leave. Or if you're going out in the evening, you have to ask, you know, permission and let the sister know that you're going, you know, and... You know, as we get older, sometimes you're sneaking a little later or things like that. You go to a party or on a date or something because you're at the age now where you're going to start dating. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Because you start at maybe 18 and quite a few. Well, I know wasn't allowed to date. I didn't date until I went into nursing school. That's how I met my husband.
Oh.
Actually.
So what made you decide to become a nurse? Was it just a passion?
I don't know. It was just a passion. My mommy told me that I'm the first child, and she said she wanted to be a nurse. So she got married so early and had so many children. She did not, you know, but she said, from as a little girl, I always said I wanted to be a nurse. But I can remember vaguely when I was about 4 or 5 years where we were living, I think there was a nurse who used, a public health nurse, because she wore a brown uniform, I think, 4 or 5. And I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but she used to board at the house, or she had a little room or something there.
Right.
You know, at 4 or 5, but we were living in Watttown because my father was a public health inspector. So we were living in Watttown in St. Anne. I can remember that house, and there was this nurse. Can't remember, I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but I always like.
You want to say your father's name because some of the seniors might know them, know him from, you know, other positions that they have had perhaps around that time or before.
What, public health?
Yes, your dad's name.
No, I don't think so. These are the older nurses who have all died. I've met quite a few sisters.
No. You said your dad was a public health person?
It was public health, but this was in the 30s, early 30s, 40s.
Oh,
because he had to go to Kingston to be trained as a public health inspector.
Uh-huh.
And so he had to do with what was Dr. Lightburn. There was this female doctor who was a public health doctor who you had public health nurses. And I remember my father worked along with the public health nurses, like to go to the school to inoculate children when there was an outbreak of typhoid or whatever.
Right.
You know, I remember him saying he had to go to Kingston to become a public health inspector. I don't know how. This was before I was born, of course.
Right.
But I knew him as a public health inspector.
And what
working
was
with
your
the
dad
government.
Name?
Oh, he was Alfred Vaughan.
Okay.
From Sablama.
All right, now we got
yeah.
it out. Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was, and so he worked in the Sandy Gully project, something to do with the eradication of the anopheles mosquito that carried malaria. He worked
uh-huh.
along with the American soldiers at the Sandy Gully.
Right, Sandy
whatever.
Gully. We Kingstonians know that.
Something, right.
Sandy
right. Gully, I think it was American soldiers.
During the days of the war, we had quite,
right.
that was quite an active place, yes. Uh-huh.
Right. So,
see, Miss
Keeney,
there's some of us that is much older than you.
Yes.
And let me just tell I see people calling in from 631-973-954-917. I want to thank you for being here and to let you know that if you would like to join the Labrish, just hit 1 on your telephone, and that will indicate to me that you want to say, make a comment, enlighten us in some way. So, and I will open up the mic to you. So back to you, Miss Jeannie. So now let me ask you this. Do you remember anything special? Was there any type of things that you would be disciplined about if you didn't do something or so? I'm thinking of situations where sometimes some of the students, past students from high school, talked about, you know, punishment or demerit or, you know, that kind of thing. Did any of that go on in your nursing learning period?
Not really, because we were adults. We were adults,
right.
Not schoolgirls anymore. And you're
young,
young
adults, really.
And you're, yes,
you had
so
to be chaperoned, but not chastised.
Right, you were, you know, because, and some of the nurses were older than us, you know.
Right.
And
uh-huh.
Some of the older nurses used to mother us. And I'm talking about myself. So you had some more mature nurses, you know, people who were engaged or going steady and things, and you're allowed to go out, and you're supposed to be back within a certain time. No, no chastisement. No, we were young ladies and you were supposed to behave a certain way.
Yeah, it was just...
We had little mishaps where some people had to go home. Not very often, you know?
Uh-huh.
Because things like when we went in, we were not supposed to be married or have children or something like that.
Well, oh, you mean if you were married, you couldn't get in the program?
I said yes. Yes.
Oh,
as far as yes, up to that point. But afterwards, we've had cases where one or a couple of nurses maybe have gotten pregnant. They went and got married and had their babies, and they were allowed to come back to KPH. If you were at UC, though, they would not take you back.
Oh,
that's
really
how strict it was, right? And so there are a couple of nurses who joined our senior year because they went off, they got married and had maybe a child, but at KPH they would take you back as long as you're married.
Wow.
There are one or two. I think there are about maybe two who joined my batch.
Mm-hmm.
One particular one was a youth
senior. So as you progress through the system, you would take over from the knocking on the doors of the younger
No, not us, because
nurses.
We moved on to another home. They sent us to another
nurse. So you weren't living there at all. I got you.
And I don't know who was hitting the doors. It might have been the home sisters. And
right,
you had porters.
Okay.
You had people. You had the porters with a form
uh-huh.
of security who made sure the doors, the gates were locked, and when the gates were opened.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? The gates were locked at a certain time.
You remember what time it was?
No, I don't know if it's 11 or 12. It might have been about
12.
Well, we were young ladies. You go out, you go to a movie, you maybe go to dinner, you go dancing if you have, when you're off or something.
Uh-huh.
I sort of don't remember, but the gate was locked.
Do you remember anything you did in Kingston that was fun? I know you were a country girl.
Yeah, my dear, I was a country girl, but my batchmates used to say, you come from country, but you're not a country bumpkin, my dear, because I was
well,
up here
actually,
in the fashion.
Well, part of Westmoreland that you come from some of the people who might not know, was Liketown.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Because it's the capital of the parish, right?
Right, right. And Savlemar was up there. And then with the influence of the Frome estate and the English families and workers there, you know, we had a lot of
expatriates.
Yes, and we had a lot of art and at the town hall. People, for instance, I remember, they always have all sorts of dances and because you had a lot of civil servants. It seems as if, not seen, a lot of people, you know, were trained maybe in Kingston that they would send them to the different parishes when they are juniors. And so you had a lot of judges, lawyers, barristers, clerk of the courts, nurses, teachers, civil servants on a whole. It's as if they would send them to Sablemar. I suppose the other parishes too, but we met a lot of people. And my father was a very social person, especially he was involved in the Methodist Church. And, you know, if a police and his family came, or a teacher and family, and they came to his church, he saw to them, and we were always having visitors or some family or somebody to dinner on a Sunday. Daddy was very sociable. He was a very sociable person. And so you got to meet families. And when Daddy, between Sablemar, Kingston, and St. Anne, I think he went back to Sablemar because of his mother, because he was an only child, and his mother was getting older, and he was the only child. I think Grandma and Grandpa, I think Grandpa, they divorced or something. I know they were separated or something. But Grandpa sort of lived close by, but I don't know. I think it's because of his mother. I remember him saying why he went back to Sablemar. And then afterwards he said, well, with the babies coming, the public health could not pay the bills. And so he went on and he was taught himself printing with the help of a friend in England, and he started, I remember, a little printing machine, and he ended up having a big printery, and that is what he worked at and brought us up.
Big businessman. So, okay, tell me about the graduation, and I wanted to share with the fans a little bit about the cancer screening clinic that you were involved in.
Oh, when I finished midwifery, I went off to Toronto, and I was there for about 4 years. I went down to Jersey, and I became ill and was hospitalized, and so I went home. My father sent my mother for me, and I went back home, saying, everybody came to America, and, you know, what's happening to me? I had to go back home. Well, fortunately, I had mom and dad, and after a couple of months, when I got better, I was doing a bit of private nursing, and then I decided to leave and do something more permanent or go back to Canada, and I was offered a job at the Jamaica Cancer Society. The person who was in charge of the private nurses at Medical Associates Hospital sent a message that she wanted to see me, and she said, I heard you're leaving us, and we're very sad about that, but the Cancer Society is looking for a nurse to work, and she sent me there, and I had the interview, and they hired me.
So you were the first,
know,
staff
the first
nurse
to
be there.
Yes, they asked me to set up a clinic.
You're the person who set it up. Oh,
right.
Okay.
And so with the help of a doctor at Medical Associates, Dr. Jimmy Barras, who was OB-GYN doctor there, and Dr. Emil Khoury, who was a surgeon there, they came and gave their services to the Cancer Society for free. And they taught me to do breast self-examinations and to do pap smears. And on that, I set up the clinic, and I worked there for a year alone. And then it mushroomed so much that after a year I had to ask for help because the women were coming. And then I got another nurse, and I was there for 14 years.
Wow. And
I was the first nurse to be employed there, and I was charge nurse until I had my second child. I sort of gave up being in charge, but I was still the senior nurse there. and I assisted in.
And where was that located?
We started in Crossroads on Melmac Avenue, and then they bought a home over at Lady Musgrave Road. And
so this is all in Kingston?
Right, and that's where the Cancer Society Clinic is now. It was a little bungalow, and we had our clinic there, and I visited a couple of years ago, and it's now a big two-story building, and they are doing not only pap smears and breast examinations, but they also do mammograms. They screen for colorectal cancer. What else?
And during the time you were in charge, do you have any idea of how many screenings were done?
Well, I was there for 14 years, and when I left, we had seen over, I think it was something like 26,000 patients.
Wow.
And
this was male and female, or just anybody,
no.
Or just women?
No. Just female for breast and cervical cancer. No. We've had one or two males who came who had lumps in their breasts because, you know, men get cancer of the breast
Right.
Yes, but this was just for female because of the cervical cancer. And the breast cancer.
That's amazing. So that's quite an accomplishment and a feather in your cap.
Yes, I'm proud to say yes. It was very, it was a very good job. It was the contact I had with my patients. I met people from all strata of life in that clinic. I fitted prosthesis, artificial breasts, for people who couldn't go to the States to have it done. We had a Reach the Recovery group, which we started, where people who had mastectomies, there was a lady named Curly Davis, who visited the clinic one day and said she lived in America, she had a mastectomy, she's now home, she was taught how to, you know, the Reach the Recovery is the post-op breast mastectomy exercises and things, or they go to see the patient before. And I wrote to Teresa Lisa, who wrote the book Reach to Recovery, and she sent me several copies. I was in touch with her through Curly Davis, and we started our first mastectomy group where you visit the patient in the hospital before surgery to encourage them because you've gone through the same experience and visit after with our little kits and teach them how to do their exercises, of course, with the aid of the doctors. And then there was a time when they had a lot of shooting. There were a lot of shootings and things going on, and we found that a lot of male had gunshot wounds and had to have colostomies. And so we started providing colostomy bags for these people, you know, the ileostomy bags.
Uh-huh.
People who had to have urine passing through the cell, whether temporarily or permanently. So I met a lot of people there, too. And we had an ostomy welfare group that was started. We had Peace Corps volunteers, nurses who came and worked with us.
Uh-huh.
And we had several doctors.
Foreigners, or it was Jamaican nurses coming back to give back?
No, these are Peace Corps volunteers, American nurses who
are
RNs. But they are in the Peace Corps, and they send them to Jamaica. And they, every year or every 2 years, we would get a Peace Corps volunteer working with us.
I got you.
Because remember, the Cancer Society is a benevolent society where you run off the funds you make from the public. And we had a board of directors.
And who was in the board of directors? You mentioned.
Well, when I was there, Dr. Carl Wilson James
was
the chairman of the board.
Uh-huh.
A wonderful
and it's
doctor.
Interesting because just the week before, I had read from Rosemary Brown's book that she wrote, which is Being Brown, A Very Public Affair. And
yes.
The first chapter talked about her family and he happened to be her uncle.
Her uncle, right?
Yes.
And I read the book.
Spoke about
yes.
his passion for what
right.
he did, you know,
yes.
in
yes.
Jamaica.
As
a
very
doctor.
Good doctor. And
yes.
he looked after poor people for free. And even in his 90s, he was still going to his clinic, seeing patients for free. He was a wonderful doctor. He had he was a senior surgeon and medical doctor, and he had his degrees in both.
She thought a lot of him. I remember reading his book.
He was a great doctor, and he loved the Cancer Society, and he was a very kind, compassionate man, and he was very kind to me. I mean,
I thought it was coincidental because, you know, I just stumbled on the importance of this woman because she is on the first black woman to be on a Canadian stamp.
Right.
And I thought it's ironic that I had sent for her book and read the first chapter just the week before you were to come on last week, but the week prior to that was what the show was about. And she
Imagine
spoke
that.
So strongly about this male influence in her life,
and it happened
to be the same person that you are describing now.
Right.
So it's funny how the universe works.
Yes.
Because I never heard of Rosemary Brown before.
Yeah, me
too. So, you know, it's all good. But I want to take another minute to remind the callers on the board and those listening online. If anyone listening online want to join the Labrish, do you please call 718-766-4558 because I'm not able to, connect with you online. It's possible with the platform because I'm using a very high-tech platform with Blog Talk Radio. However, I cannot do both things yet. I'm still working on that. I want to thank the callers that call in and sit with us in the backyard and just enjoy the Labrish. I hope you're relaxed and enjoying just the conversation we're having. Because I didn't know too much. I knew that nurses got trained at KPH, but not really the procedure. I am really impressed to know that in those days you didn't have to pay. So may I ask, it was a selective process then because you were selected, you applied, and then I suppose everybody applied did not necessarily get through the process. Is that correct?
Correct, yes, correct.
So you were
processed. And,
interviewed. And did you have
interviewed.
Did you have to sort of sit for any type of test before you were selected for an interview?
No.
Okay.
You didn't have to have
so
a
you
test.
Were, you just applied.
They got your schooling. You got your history, history, your family history, you know, and you would be recommended by some important person.
In your parish.
In your eighth part of the, yes, where you were
right,
from. A doctor. And I had an aunt who was trained at KPH too, and she was also a midwife over a sister over at Jubilee.
And
was Nurse Lynette.
What was her name?
Nurse Lynette Bravo. Nurse Lynette Bravo, who was my mother's sister.
I see.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
So, and my headmaster from Manning's and
what
his wife, Miss Prescott, who was the headmistress. So, you know, and then in PTS you prove yourself.
Right.
PTS you prove yourself because they watch everything.
Well, what do you think stood out most to you during that training that I know you went on, you know, to work here in the United States too? But what, you know, I'm always so proud of being born and raised in Jamaica, and thank God that that was the place that he put me, you know, instead of anywhere else. And in spite of the fact that I don't plan to go there to retire, I'm retired right here in the South where I live. But still, you know, I just know in my heart And in my consciousness, that the things I learned, the interactions I had, and the education I got there really made me who I am. So I'm just wondering if you would like to share what, in your words, was strong about that training that you got from KPH that perhaps helped you in your, you know, career as an adult.
The hands-on training that we had, the hands-on, and the respect that you got from people in the community, your co-workers, and the doctors you worked with. We took these things for granted because we did not realize until we left home and went to another country. It was like a sort of a finishing school, because you go to high school, and in Jamaica, unfortunately, the school I went to, it was like a finishing school. You were taught, you know, so much.
The quorum.
You know? And we were, like, I was a member of the Girl Guides, and I was in 4-H Club, and I was in a lot of programs that were introduced for the first time. For instance, what they called at the time, it was home economics. We called it domestic science. My class in high school was the first group to do domestic science in high school, things like that. I went into nursing, and our group was among the first to change from the 12-hour shift to the 8-hour mm-hmm. shift, things uh-huh. like that. There are a lot of changes just around the time when we were young ladies, you know, lots and lots of little changes. Because they said we used to do the night shift or the day shift, 12 hours. But in the days, you would go to first lunch and go back on the ward. And the person who went to second lunch would be able to stay until 3 o'clock, rest or do what you ever, and then you go back from 3 to 6. And we would come off at 3.
And graduation now. Let me ask you this. Did you have any type of graduation ceremony?
Oh, yes. Graduation now. You had to do your exams and everything. And when you passed, they had a beautiful graduation. And at that time, we joined our batchmates up at university. So we had... You had one of graduation where you got your certificate. Okay, so we dressed in our uniforms and we joined our batchmates at the university. I can't remember the name of the place.
You mean your nurse's uniform?
Did
you wear
uniform.
A robe thing like they do now at the university?
No. You wore your uniform. You got your pin. Your pin.
That's the pin I lost.
And you got your certificate, yes. I can't remember what's on the pin. It was a silver pin with a blue in it.
Right.
And the university pin was silver with a red thing because your uniforms were red. And we went up.
I see a hand
called.
Up. The hand is down. Okay. Just a minute. If 631-451 want to interact, you can hit 1 again. I thought I saw... that you had raised your hand and it went off. So if you do want to make a comment or ask a question, please hit 1 on your telephone. Back to you, Miss Jeannie.
Yes, my dear. And after that ceremony, we went back and then we had a beautiful graduation and we were the first nurses. Of course, the batches, the UC nurses had their graduation separate. And we had ours, the first nurse graduation to be held at the
UC
the hotel in New Kingston. No man. Was it the Sheraton or I can't remember the name of the hotel.
Well, lots of hands are up. So
yes,
while you
maybe
pull that thought,
and Baron Lee and the Dragonaires played for us.
Oh,
and
wow.
And instead of wearing white dresses, you know, evening dresses, we had a dinner and a ball and we wore blue. We wore a beautiful sparkling. Everybody bought this sparkling organza material. And we made the dresses. And in that year, there was the bell dresses, the bell skirts.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my dear, you should have Zenas we wore.
Is that the one with the crinoline under it?
No, it was the bell dresses, the bell skirts. It's called like a bell, you know?
Right.
And but it is a bell skirt. It didn't fit
close
to you.
All right, let me open the mic, 631451. And I'll open the mic for the next caller in a minute. So 631451, you're in the backyard. Welcome to the backyard. Who do I have?
Hi, Margaret. This is Janine from Long Island.
Hi, Miss Janine.
Hi.
Welcome.
How are you?
Great.
The bell dress was gathered at the bottom, and it's, you know, like pulled,
but
formed the bell.
Oh, that's in.
Yeah.
They're wearing it now. Isn't that something?
Yes.
All right, let me open the mic to 945274. Good evening. You're in the backyard. Who do I have? 954274, would you like to talk? Oh, I guess not. Okay, back to Miss Janine.
Yes.
Did you have a question for
Jeannie? Not really a question. I just wanted her to know it's nice of her to come on and share, you know, her experience as a nurse in Jamaica, you know.
Yeah, we really appreciate it because this is the first nurse's story we have.
Right.
And as I say, now, Jeannie, I want to ask you one question. You mentioned about your aunt being trained at KPH, right?
Yes.
Do you remember have an idea of what year that was?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Because, you know, those people didn't tell their ages. I know she was older than Mom, but you didn't know her age. I don't know. I know. She was a big staff nurse at Jubilee when I went in, an older one.
That means that she had been there for some years.
Oh, yes. Eventually,
so
she went to the United States.
It might be 5 years before you or 10 years before you?
You mean that she graduated?
Uh-huh.
Oh, no. I think she delivered my mother with her twins in 1944 in Sablemar Hospital, Aunt Lynette.
Yes,
these are older.
The history go back so far, yet I cannot find anything. I cannot find anything about the nursing school at KPH. So I am asking callers on the board, if you know of anyone who may have some information that before our guest this evening are being trained at KPH, it would be interesting to know. I am sure, first of all, they're not doing the training anymore there, right, Jeannie?
Yeah, this is what I understand. They're not having
you
at the university or at KPH.
Right.
I was told.
So, but it would be interesting to find out if people who were trained like 10 years before you, if things were different. It's always interesting to know, you know, what has changed over the years. Because I remember some of the callers who spoke about their school days. Even our first person who spoke about his school days at St. George's, somebody else that went to St. George's before him or after him could talk about things that were different. So, you know, as humans, we're changing. Every day, things change all over the world. I mean, but I think that there has been even a more dramatic change in Jamaica after they became independent. Because, as you said, Jeannie, that it shifted, even the numbers changed.
Right.
Because I suppose they closed the chapter. You went in before. You started your training before they became independent.
Right.
Am I correct?
Yeah.
And then the independence came the year you graduated.
Or the year before.
The year before.
When I graduated.
So you actually graduated in the independent Jamaica.
Yes.
So, by that time, they had started the renumbering of the classes.
I did not.
Even that is
I
a
was
big
not. I was not even aware of it until I spoke to a nurse who was junior to me, and she's the one who told me that she was batch one, and her group was batches one and two. I didn't
right.
know that.
We have caller number 954274 who has put up their hand. So your mic is open. Good evening. Who do I have? Hello? 954274? Okay, well, it must be an error again. I've closed the mic. Okay.
And what I found fascinating is that a lot of the sisters that I met at KPH while I was a student, they were seniors. They were sisters working in matron's office, because when you get to a certain point, you were working in matron's office. You were a home sister. You were head of the ward. And listen, quite a few of them worked in Sablamar. Before
so let me ask
I was
something.
Born, and after I was born, because as I remember, there was a nurse Nevers in the office who delivered mom of the twins, and then her sister, Aunt Madge, delivered her of Beverly, the one after the twins. That's how it is.
I see.
So I was just a little girl.
Right.
And I worked on ward.
Did
I worked
the sisters
with ward
wear a different hat, a headgear?
They wore a fall, yes. They wore a fall.
Was it white?
White. Matron wore a white.
Love to see pictures of those people. Do you have pictures of your batch with the hats on and all of that?
Oh, yes. We have a group picture. Each group at graduation, you have pictures with all the doctors and sisters and, you know, the officials of the hospital. Oh,
right.
Yes. I have the pictures hanging in my house, and I can see all my batch mates, all my group mates.
I don't think the nurses now are wearing any hats. I don't think they wear any headgear or anything. So
That because in America and Canada,
it has evolved. Yeah,
in America and Canada, they did not.
We have 3 more minutes left on our time, and I really want to thank you so much for sharing this information with us. I want to thank the callers on the board from 973-917. And I thank you for being here. We're always here to celebrate and enlighten about the Jamaica before independence and even after. But as you know, on Backyard Labrish, we only celebrate and talk about things that have had an impression on our lives in a positive way. And I'd like to tell you that if you'd like to share your story, we would love to have you tell it, because I find that, you know, we have to write our own history. It is better for us from that generation that was not being documented, really, because now I can't even find anything about how your aunt got trained, Jeannie. And it would be good to know what went on during that period, perhaps 10 or 15 years before you. And I wondered
and
what the training was like. Now, those people
30.
Are not here with us to tell us.
Anymore,
but at least we can tell our stories. And with this new technology that is so cool, I'm encouraging the seniors not to be scared of it, but to embrace it. Because we can use it for good. I know, you know, there's a lot of things that we would not consider being a part of being done with this technology. But we can really preserve all of us that still have our memories intact and like going back in our early memories. It's just a great way to preserve your memories. So please go to backyardlabrish.com, send me a comment or a note. I hope you're on my mailing list and get the mailing about our future guests. So with that said, Miss Jeannie, and two Jeannies tonight, please let me know. We have a couple of seconds, so you can make a last comment if you would like.
Yes.
6 seconds
I would
left.
Like to say how happy and proud I am that I'm a Jamaican, because of the training we got at home, back home, from growing up, from infant school, right up to high school. We were told we were citizens of the world. We were told that. We were told that we should strive to be good people, because we're in an era where we had, at the point where we were had husbands. We might marry husbands who would become prime ministers or ministers of government. We should know how to conduct ourselves. We were told that. We were told we're citizens of the world. And the type of training we got at home, I did not really appreciate it, but having come to work in Canada, work in America, I'm so glad for the training I got, that I could be, that I know how to behave, and it has helped me in my life. I am proud that I'm brought up in Jamaica. We were well brought up. I was fortunate to have both parents who cared for us and trained us. And, you know, not until you leave home you realize what it was all about when your parents were disciplining you and teaching you things, and our teachers taught us a lot, because things we didn't learn from home, we learned at school and in nursing school.
And
I'm thankful for the training. We're well-rounded.
Yes.
Even if you weren't a top student, you were well-rounded, because you were taught subjects from you started high school. You had all these subjects until you got to the senior year. Then you choose what you do for your exams. But I appreciate it now that I live in this country and see what happened, you know, the education system in Jamaica, the British system. I am not knocking it. That is what I got, and I appreciate it very much, and it has made me who I am today.
Amen.
Amen.
I feel the same way. We were first-class citizens.
Amen.
Yes.
And
no matter
deprived.
No matter how poor you were, poor people didn't mean you were criminals. Poor, humble people who were well-behaved, well-mannered, we were well brought up. In the 40s, I was born 1941, and the training and the love and the care and the extended family with grandparents and aunts and whoever, we were well brought up in Jamaica, and I am proud to be
so
a Jamaican.
True. Well, I am glad that you can help me do what I do each week, which is to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica,
land
we love.
Yes.
I want to thank everyone for being here and to ask you to tell your friends about the show. And if you find a show, they're all archived. If you find a show that you think another person would like, just copy the URL, which is the address at the top, and you can send it to them in an email, or just ask them to visit backyardlabbish.com, and they will see the icon on the right for the blog talk shows, and they can pick a show and just relax while they do their email and listen to some shows that we have done, and we've done several. So I want to thank everyone for being here. And thank you for your continued support, really. And we're getting into the mood for Christmas next week. So I will let you know what we will be perhaps talking about, old-time Christmas. Hmm. So join me next week when we will be live again. Miss Jeannie, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you. It was my pleasure, and I hope I was able to educate.
You were.
Tell people what is happening in Jamaica.
Right. And my loyal fan from
Long Island.
Thanks for tuning in.
You're welcome.
The other fans on the board, thank you for being here. And we hope to see you next week. So as I always say to everyone, good night and make it a great week.
God bless.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
You're welcome.